Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest joining us from the UK is Richard Barrett. He is author of What My Soul Told Me. This book provides a practical step-by-step guide to soul activation. This four-step process involves connecting with your soul, befriending your soul, trusting your soul, becoming one with your soul. Your soul in a human body, but your ego is unaware of this. To fully step into soul consciousness, you must learn how to align the beliefs of your ego with the values of your soul. Richard is founder and chairman of the Barrett Values Center, an internationally recognized thought leader on values, culture, and leadership in business and society. He is a fellow of the World Business Academy, and member of the Wisdom Council of the Center for Integral Wisdom, and honorary board member of the Spirit of Humanity Forum. You can find out more about Richard and what he has to offer by visiting the website www.valuescenter.com, and center is spelled C-E-N-T-R-E, that's valuescenter.com, and I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Richard to the show. Good day, Richard. Good evening, Richard.
Oh, hello, Robert.
Thank you. I appreciate you joining me. It's late there in the UK, but, I have to give you credit for being able to chat about such a deep subject at so late an hour for you there.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, no, it's about 9 p.m. here, and it's not too late, but... Anyhow, I'm still awake. That's the main thing.
That's great. Well, I enjoyed our chat before, and this particular book, What My Soul Told Me, I really enjoyed it, particularly the practical step-by-step guide, because, for me, the value of the things that a book can teach is how to apply it into everyday life. And, it seems like, that's kind of what we're here for, is to apply, those things that we learn. And I appreciate a book that pays particular attention to that.
Well, thank you. Yes, I did want the book to be more than just... as I say in the beginning, a cosmology or a philosophy. I wanted to give people the opportunity to say, well, okay, so how do I connect with my soul? How do I befriend my soul? How do I trust my soul? How do I become one with my soul? And provide some practical suggestions, which I found to be useful over my lifetime. Robert, I don't think I could have written this book much earlier, because I think, there's a sense in which as you get older and you get wiser and you evolve and grow, and I just reached the time when I was ready to explain all the things that I'd been doing to work on myself, and so this book was actually written in about 2 months. Usually it takes me a whole year. I can't say it was total dictation from my soul, but it was what my soul told me, basically.
Well, I read that, that you were kind of working on another book and you kind of got interrupted. It's like, wait a minute, you got to do this one first.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how it happened. And, Yeah, it was. It just wanted to be written.
That's good. Well, you know, and I mean, it is. It's wonderful to be able to have that direct communication, even if it is almost like dictation. You know, to be able to take that and run with it, and because to me, you know, that flow and that connectedness, which is, you know, really what your book is about, and being able to connect with and utilize that connection to, you know, to live this life better. You know, to me, that's like that's an author's dream. You know, to be able to do that and effortlessly.
Yes, it is. And strangely, you know, you say an author's dream. I just recently did a similar sort of show for a network that basically is for authors and writers. And it really came home to me when I was doing that show that writing, at least for me, is when I'm in touch with the divine, or whatever I consider to be divine, because it does flow. I notice when I'm writing a book that my life really becomes full of synchronicity. An example, but it happens like every day. Yesterday, I was doing a half-hour interview. I was interviewing John Mackey, who's the CEO of Whole Foods in America, and we were doing that interview as a sort of an advert for my company's conference next year in Canada, and John mentioned a book. And I immediately knew that was a synchronicity. That was my soul giving me some information, because that book he mentioned was absolutely exactly what I was looking for completing another book I'm working on right now called A New Psychology of Human Wellbeing. And I've got to the point now where I notice those synchronicities. You know, I could have just heard him say that book and then passed on, but mm-hmm. I knew immediately that I had to get that book, and you know, 24 hours later, I had it in my hand. So I've got to the point where I realize that actually synchronicities, if you're aware of them, are daily events, and I call them kind of it's the soul giving you some sort of indication or some ideas about whatever it is that you're working on that you need to pay attention to. It's like, you know, your best friend, you know, passing you a note in the meeting and telling you what to say. You know, something like that. Anyhow, so I think it's very, very, writing for me is very, very much a sort of a spiritual discipline, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, and I liked the term you used as like a soul prompt, you know, as far as synchronicities, you know, that it being a prompt, you know, because to me, when those happen, and I whenever they happen, I mean, and it seems that there are times when there's a kind of ebbs and flows, and some days or some weeks, you know, there will be a lot of synchronicity happening, you know, it seems like, and then everything is flowing properly, or not, they're flowing easily, you know, and, you know, and then there are times when they just seem to not be there, and then it's, you know, then I kind of have to sit back and think, you know, why not, you know, what am I doing or not doing, you know, that is where I'm not getting those prompts, you know, like I want, but if you do follow them, like you say, I mean, it they can lead to some just really fun, exciting things. You know what I mean? And I think that's one of the things I every time a synchronicity happens, I have to stop and say thank you. You know what I mean? Because it's like I'm grateful for any kind of prompting I can get.
Yeah, me too. And I think soul prompts is a good way of saying this, because I think that the soul really wants to be present. You know, the soul incarnates into our physical body, I think, for three purposes. Purpose number one is self-expression. Purpose number two is connection. And purpose number three is contribution. And they're all linked. And once you get to the point where you're beginning to align with your soul, these are the things that come through. So self-expression is about self-actualization. Usually the self-actualization occurs when you're in your 40s, where you've started your career and suddenly you realize you're actually doing the wrong thing, that it's not the wrong thing, but it's not what you're passionate about. And what you're really passionate about, what your soul is trying to tell you, is, this other thing is the most important thing. And that usually occurs in the 40s. And that's, if we could grow up, and if, how shall I put it, if our childhood was such that our parents encouraged self-expression, I think that would be hugely helpful for people, but unfortunately we tend to get that creativity, which is linked to our self-expression, socialized out of us. We get told what is right and wrong, and what is good and bad, and what is pretty and what is ugly, and by the time we get to 20, we're kind of conditioned. There was a study done by a fellow called Joseph Land some time ago, where he measured creativity in children, and he followed the same cohort of children through till their early 20s. And he found that when he measured their creativity age 3 to 5, the 98% were genius level creativity, and 5 years later that had gone down to about 30 or 40%, and another 5 years later it had gone down to 10%. And by the time this cohort reached their 20s, only 2% of them had genius level creativity. So where did all that go? And I think it's just that creativity that we feel that when we're young is the expression of the soul, and the ego gradually takes over in our lives, and we begin to, because we have to learn how to survive and stay safe and feel secure in this physical world, and so the ego really has a role to play in helping us to do that. But in doing so, the soul is moves into the background, and then as you get through life and you begin then to individuate and self-actualize and move through the higher stages of development, the soul impulse comes through again, and you begin to feel a certain sort of passion or for something that the things that you might be interested in, and you may have a career in one area, but actually your passion lies in another. And the question is, are you willing to give up your career to move to follow your passion? And of course, that takes a lot of courage.
Yeah.
Especially if you've got, children, teenage children, or children going to college, and you need, you've got a good career, but oh my God, I'm being pulled in this other direction, which I've got no qualifications, and I don't know whether you can even earn an income.
Yeah. We've been talking about the soul. Would you mind, for the listening audience, describe, how would you actually describe what the soul is?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that, Robert. So first of all, we think we live in a three-dimensional physical reality. Actually, the three-dimensionality and the physicality is a property of our senses. We only sense a small spectrum of the frequencies of vibration, mm-hmm. and so we're not able to take in all of the other frequencies of vibration. So actually, who we are, these energetic beings living in a fourth dimensional world, and that's the world of the soul, and it's hidden from us, this four-dimensional world, and it is actually the reality. the true reality, the energetic reality. And the three-dimensional world is a false reality. It's like I describe this in a couple of ways in the book, one very simple way to describe it is to take a comb. You know, everybody has a comb in their pocket to run through their hair. And if you cover up the top half of the comb, all you see is the separate teeth of the comb. And that's pretty much what we see in our three-dimensional physical world. We see separate teeth. We're all individuals and we're all separate. But actually, when you lift your hand and see the top half of the comb, you realize that all of those teeth are connected. And that's how we are, because we're all individuated aspects of this universal energy field. And when we recognize that we're all part of that same energy field and we're all connected, when I give to you, I realize that I'm giving to myself, because we're all connected, we're all individuated aspects of that same field. And so that's quite a high level of consciousness, when you begin to recognize that unity that exists and the fact that there is no separation. But that's the world that the soul lives in. And when it incarnates into the physical body, it leaves that world behind, but it is, attempting to live in this three-dimensional physical world, but finds it immediately, from the moments of conception, or certainly through the time in the womb and the early childhood, the soul finds it really hard to be in this physical world. And so it does something quite extraordinary. Have you heard of multiple personality disorder, where when a child actually experiences a very traumatic experience which indicates a lack of love, it finds it so painful to bear that it builds another personality. And so that it can when it's experiencing that pain, which it does because of some frequent event, being abused or whatever, it can lead a sort of normal life because it hides the pain away. Well, I think that's what the ego is, actually. The ego is just the soul, a mechanism of the soul, the soul sets up so that it can actually bear to live in our world, even in the most loving parents, the child in the physical body will have pain. In some situations, will feel unloved, and for the soul, that's really hard to bear. So it sets up this other personality, which we call the ego, which kind of protects the soul from these painful experiences. And the ego then grows and develops and becomes, in a sense, the guardian of the soul. And we develop that ego all the way through into our 20s and 30s. And then the second half of our life, it's all about letting go of the ego so we can get back to the soul.
I know. That's funny. But yeah, and I like that explanation, as far, because, that just really makes it clear the distinction, the kind of the role, so to speak, that the ego plays in connection with the soul. When you mentioned, the ego's work with this three-dimensional awareness, one of the things I noticed you talked about, the properties of the three dimensions are time, space, and matter. And then the properties of the fourth dimension, which you said are, the soul exists, are timelessness, omnipresence, and energy. And that kind of fits right in. I have a listener in the chat room who had a question, and it kind of fits in with that those particular properties. And her question was, do you feel that our soul has prophetic insight into the future? So I guess, you know, because of the reason that I thought it's a great question is because it kind of connects with the idea of the property of timelessness in the fourth dimension.
Yeah, that is a really interesting question of the you know, is the soul prophetic? Because in exactly as you were saying, the soul lives in a timeless dimension, this ever present moment, and for me that has suggests several things. For example, it immediately suggests that this whole idea that we have of past lives are actually present lives. Because if you're thinking about those past, in the physical dimension, if you're thinking about them, then yeah, there's a past and there's a future, but actually at the soul level, there's this ever-present moment. Can we really imagine what that is like? I don't know, I'm not sure that I can, but that would mean to me that, the word prophetic suggests a knowledge about the future.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a tough one, isn't it?
really interesting question. If we're living in a timeless present moment, well, what is the future? That future is a concept of our three-dimensional physical world. It's a really hard question to answer. I don't think I have the understanding or the intelligence to be able to answer that question, because it just raises so many other questions.
Well, yeah, you know, and what I mean, I understand, you know, I believe, you know, that there are times when we have that soul communication, you know, that the soul kind of lets us know that, you know, there's something that we are to experience or manifest, basic experience, that, you know, kind of like maybe a heads up kind of thing. And, you know, and if they, you know, if there is truly timelessness, you know, with the past, present, and future all happening simultaneously, my thought is that, you know, that there are just so many possible futures, you know, that, I mean, you know, that we can really express any one of them depending on which choices that we make. So it's kind of like, you know, all of the futures are possible, you know. It depends on whether or not we kind of take those prompts and bring them into our physical experience.
Yeah, and so here's another thought, which, you know, actually goes back to that idea. My soul gave me a prompt, which was almost, which actually, in a sense, is a prophecy, but the prophecy actually is in a sense a destiny that I can choose to live up to or not, as long as I keep, removing the fears of my ego and aligning myself with my soul. And I'll tell you this story. It goes back to around 1992, so we're going back 20-some years, when I was working at the World Bank, and about in 1990, roughly, when I was about 45 years old, I realized that I was no longer passionate about my chosen career, which was in the field of transportation. And then let me just a little side here to make have some fun. So I thought to my, you know, I said to people, you know, when I was, you know, 45, I realized that I'd misheard my soul when I was 17. I thought my soul said transportation, but actually it said transformation. so I'd been a transportation engineer. At 45, I suddenly realized I'm more of a I need to become a transformation engineer. And so that was the start for me in 1990. And then by 1992, I'm already working on a book, and in my weekends I'm doing workshops and giving workshops. And I'm doing this workshop in Boulder, Colorado, on finding your mission in life. And on the second day of that workshop, in the afternoon, somebody said to me, "So, you know, you're teaching this, but so what's your mission in life?" You know, and I thought, well, I had a very well rehearsed affirmation, yeah, which was, "I'm an internationally recognized speaker and author on personal and organizational transformation." Well, the moment the question was asked, I could not, for the life of me, remember my affirmation, and. It was. I felt a little embarrassed, so I said, "Hang on a second," and I closed my eyes, trying to remember this affirmation. And then out of my mouth, like 4 or 5 seconds later, came the words, "I'm an architect of global transformation." And I went, wow.
I like that.
What? You know, where did that come from? Well, I quickly realized that that was my soul talking to me, mm-hmm. And so, in a sense, this was prophetic, because I began to realize that if I could get out of my way, out of my own way, and live the life of my soul, that's what my soul's passion and purpose was. And so, if we say the soul lives in this fourth-dimensional energetic world where there's only a present moment, but incarnates into a three-dimensional physical world where there is a past and a future, well, maybe then the soul has the ability to be prophetic up to the point that you allow yourself to follow the calling of your soul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's probably the key. So the soul knows what it wants to do. You know, when I look back at my life and I look back at that whole period when I was a transportation engineer, I was also studying psychology in my spare time. But when I look back at that period and I say, well, why did I spend those 20 years doing that? I realize actually that it was brilliant plan on the part of my soul, because it led me to from my humble beginnings into working in an international organization where I got to travel the world, visit 80 or 90 countries, got to understand how the world worked economically, and gave me this breadth and depth of experience about worldly matters, which has stood me in amazing stead in my work in transformation. And, you know, one of my books is called Love, Fear, and the Destiny of Nations. And I could never have written that book if I hadn't have had that previous 20-odd years of experience. So looking back, it seems like some sort of perfect plan.
Mm-hmm.
It feels good. It feels like a... Oh, that was clever.
Yeah, really.
For me, I was just living my life and making decisions. But, you know,
right.
Hopefully making decisions which were, you know, alignment with, you know, with my soul's prompts.
Yeah, I agree. You know, that it is. It's funny sometimes when you kind of look back and recognize how past experience, even though it doesn't really necessarily connect with what you may be doing presently, but how it was a building block to get you the knowledge and experience to be able to do what it is that you set out to do.
Yeah, so just to come back one last time to our lovely listener's question. So in that sense, I think, you know, the soul has the ability to, has a plan and knows what that plan is. And as long as you, with in your ego can take away the fears that would block that from manifesting, then, you know, that soul prophecy or the soul desire will come true. I'm working on a new book at the moment, Robert, called A New Psychology of Human Well-Being, which the byline is an exploration of the impact of ego-soul dynamics on physical and mental health. And the thesis of the book really is that our reality is totally energetic, and that all our health is totally dependent on living out the self-expression, the connection, and the contribution. These are the desires of the soul, and the degree to which we block that through our ego's fears, then ill health follows. I'm thoroughly enjoying writing this book, and it is a tremendous amount of research going into the whole idea that, you know, all our sickness and all our illness are actually linked to the psychological dimension of the ego soul dynamic.
Well, definitely keep me in mind when that one's available. I would love to be able to.
No, that would be next spring.
Next spring, okay. That's okay. I should still be around.
yeah, that'll be great. Yeah.
Good. Well, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take just a quick 90-second break, Richard, do invite everyone, if you'd like to call in and ask Richard any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359, or like our friend Kathy, who's listening in the chat room, if you have a question there and you would like for me to pose it to Richard, feel free to type it in. And then, Richard, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit. The first part of your book, you indicate it's about your personal cosmology, and I would like to kind of explore that. And then, you know, you also had a topic about how everyone needs a story. And I love those two topics to be our next conversation when we come back, okay?
Okay, Robert.
Great. Okay, everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store, where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high-quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with me. And again, I do appreciate you supporting our radio guests by going online and purchasing and reading and making good use of their books. Richard Barrett, today's guest, and his book, What My Soul Told Me, are a perfect example of reading that could help you be happier and live a more soul-filled life. So you can find out more about Richard by visiting his website, which is www.valuescenter.com, and that's V-A-L-U-E-S, and then C-E-N-T-R-E.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, we're back, Richard.
Good.
Great. By the way, I do want to let you know, Kathy in the chat room said thank you very much. She really enjoyed your explanation of that, because she feels that she's kind of gotten that communication, you know, that tends to be prophetic, you know. But again, it's, you know, if it's, you know, answering what kind of implementing the soul's plan, you know, then that's a great way of expressing that.
Yeah, well, just one other point. One of the things I've noticed is, you know, I've noticed over the past 20-odd years that I have a knowing about the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that knowing comes from the soul. The only snag with it is it's not very specific in the time dimension. So
yeah.
It's like, I don't know when it's going to happen, but I kind of know that's in my future.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like, if you know, you have this book, Richard, and it may come out this year if you work at it every day, or it may come out next year if you work on it every other day. You know,
yeah.
The choice is yours. So
that's correct.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things, again, you spoke about the first half of the book. You know, you talk about your personal cosmology. Would you mind kind of explaining what that is?
Sure. You know, I say at the beginning of the book, look, everybody has a story, and we can use the word story, cosmology, but cosmology is an idea that, you know, we have a way of explaining the world that allows us to find meaning. And everybody has, you know, literally everybody has a story, you know, because we all have to, for the sake of our sanity, we have to give we have to have an explanation of how the world works, and some people are content with a very rudimentary explanation, and will pick up phrases from you know, from popular language, you know, what goes around comes around, which, you know, is just another way of talking about karma. They may not even know they're talking about karma, but, you know, but we all have this story, and we all have our story about our life, and sometimes that story is a victim story, and sometimes it's not a victim story. So the question is, what is your story, and how are you going to, how can you change your story to be in alignment with really the truth, which is that you are a soul having this human experience, and that the soul incarnated into your body for the purpose of self-expression, connection, and contribution. And so, and the soul comes from this energetic reality, which is sourced from love. So every experience that you have in your life, which is anything less than love, is very painful to the soul. And the soul, I mentioned earlier, dissociates quite early on, because this pain is really energetically, it's a low frequency of vibration. And the soul comes from this high frequency of vibration of love, and energetically that's, you know, that's the source of pain of the soul. So the soul dissociates very rapidly and forms the ego, which is the ego then absorbs that pain. The body actually absorbs the pain unconsciously, and the ego absorbs the pain subconsciously. And so then the soul is not touched by that pain, but it's still, the pain is in our energy field, because the energy field is our reality, and we have to get to heal and to get well. Because there's negative energy in our energy field, and in our ego energy field, in our body energy field, creates dysfunction, and if that dysfunction goes on long enough, it affects the human body, and we become ill. And in order to cure that, we have to bring back these unconscious and subconscious memories of the pain, relive them, and then energetically feel them and give them meaning, and by giving them meaning through our neocortex, we're able to let that pain go and get well. Now, why do we form these unconscious and subconscious beliefs, fear-based beliefs, which are linked to the memories of pain? Well, we do that really from the moment, pretty much from the first 10 weeks of our lives in the womb, right through up to the age of 7, because, and this is the interesting thing, because we don't have a fully functioning neocortex. We're not able to rationalize our experiences until we're about 7 years old. In the womb, the reptilian mind brain forms after about 10 weeks, and then not long afterwards, the limbic mind brain forms. And the reptilian mind brain is all about survival, and the limbic mind brain is all about safety. And these are the two brains, or mind brains, that we have, which are operational through the first few years of our lives. And so we have no way of explaining the experiences that we have, particularly when these experiences indicate a lack of love and therefore are painful. We can't explain. So they become unconscious, they become subconscious beliefs about how the world works. And only when we get to the 7 or 8 years old are we able to make sense of our world. But because these beliefs are unconscious, subconscious, we've hidden them away, and we only know we have them later in life when they become dysfunctional, where, you know, we get upset and we get angry, and if you get upset and angry frequently, then you can bet your bottom dollar you've got some sort of you've got some sort of subconscious or unconscious belief hanging around in your energy field, which you need to bring out, re-experience, and then give meaning to, which you couldn't give that meaning to when you were a child.
Yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, the one section in your book about connecting with your soul, I mean, you address resistance, anxiety, impatience, frustration, anger, rage. I just I laughed. I was looking at it like, boy, yes, yes, yes. You know, but it was, you know, it's interesting because all of those emotions, those are the ones that you really need to examine, you know, and put in. And I think you talk one of the steps to connecting with your soul is being an observer. I forgot the exact term here.
Self-witness,
yeah. And it seems like that's the key to being able to put those experiences and emotions into context.
Yes, so this is a, you know, this is a really important thing to be able to learn how to do, especially when you get to it happens usually in your late 20s, early 30s, or the individuating process, where you begin to objectify your ego by, let me give you an example. I, Richard, suddenly get upset, and I realize now that I've got upset, so I self-witness in the following way. I say to myself, Richard, I just noticed that you really got upset by this particular event. And so what is the fear that you're holding on to that caused you to get upset? So you see what I've done? I've objectified my ego self. And so who is it that is objectifying the ego self? I believe it's the soul. So you begin to connect with your soul by objectifying the ego. And that is called a self-witness. And when you can begin to engage your self-witness, what you're actually doing is engaging with the soul so that you can see your ego in perspective and understand why you get upset. And then there are lots of other exercises which help you with that. For example, every event is neutral. This is a tough one for many people, but basically, no matter what's happening to you, you're giving it, whatever it is, all the meaning it has for you. And somebody, two people can have the same event happen in their lives and give it very different meanings. So every event is neutral. I found that really useful in helping me to grow into soul consciousness because, and I still do, by the way, if I find myself getting a little upset that things aren't happening, the way my needs are not quite getting met, then I, as soon as I notice that upset, I say, okay, Richard, remember, every event is neutral. And then the next thing I say to myself is, so what's the possibility here? What's the opportunity? This is not going to happen. For what I thought wanted to happen is not going to happen. So what's the opportunity? I turn it around and say, well, how can I gain from this? You know, I've let go of the need to have it. How can I gain from it? Another exercise, which again is you know, a little tough sometimes at the beginning to master, is that I have no needs. You know, my wife plays with me on this one. She often reminds me that I do have needs, and I say, no, I have requirements. Oxygen has a requirement. Food is a requirement. Sex is a requirement. I mean, these are all requirements, you know. And they only become needs when you're not having them.
Yeah, there you go.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and so the point is this. When you're living in soul consciousness, all your needs are met before you know that you have them. And so the requirement never becomes a need. And I have found that to be so absolutely true in my life that, so I can say I have needs, but actually I completely remind myself often that I have no needs because let me explain it this way. If I think I have a need, then my life is not perfect. If my life is not perfect, then there is something missing. And if there's something missing that I haven't got, start to get anxious about getting whatever it is I haven't got, and then fear comes in. So having needs opens the doorway to fear. As soon as you've opened the doorway to fear, you've lost it, basically. And so the idea that I have no needs is a brilliant way of staying in soul consciousness, because the soul, in its energetic reality, the fourth dimension, actually has no needs because it its reality through thought. So, it never has a moment when its needs are not met, because whatever it thinks, it becomes its reality. And that's actually what the quantum mechanics teaches us, that everything exists in all its possibilities, and it's only when the belief of the observer is there that one of those possibilities becomes reality. And so the soul lives in that world where it has no needs. And so, again, reminding yourself you have no needs enables you to, again, align more closely with the soul.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, in the line of talking about the emotions and needs. One of the listeners in the chat room, Corrine, her question was to ask you if our, quote, painful soul moments matter and how. And what she was kind of speaking about is that, you know, just our experience of pain, emotional pain, you know, and is there, in your mind, from your understanding, is there like a purpose for it, and is it, and maybe an expression of not living and having an experience that is not soul connected?
Okay, so let's talk about that in two or three different ways.
Okay.
First of all, pain is a gift. pain is a gift because it's pointing right at what is not working in your life. It's pointing right at the misalignment of the beliefs of the ego with the values of the soul, or I'll put it another way, it's pointing right at the misalignment between the ego motivations and the soul motivations. So the pain, ultimately, in our is energetic, because we are an energetic being. That's who we are. So, so the pain is the juxtaposition of the energy of love, the energy of fear. That, I mean, that's a, I've never actually said that before, but that's what it is. Pain is a juxtaposition of the energy of fear next to the energy of love. And so when the ego is operating with fear-based beliefs, the soul is going to experience, or you're going to experience some form of pain because of that energetic juxtaposition. And so pain is a gift, and if we explore it, we will find a way of getting back into realignment. And so I think that's an important point. Now, ultimately, I think all pain comes from the experience of a lack of love, because the soul's reality is a love reality. And it's a vibrational frequency. And so any reality, anything that you experience which is the lack of love, is a lower vibrational frequency, and the soul will feel that as pain. And so our painful experiences are gifts to us to help us get back into alignment. That's one way of looking at this whole idea of.
Okay, it really does serve a purpose in trying to help us raise our awareness and kind of get those the ego and soul back into alignment.
Yeah. Now the ego, you know, let me really emphasize this point. The ego, in a sense, is the guardian of the soul. The soul dissociated from the physical experience because immediately after conception, in the next few months and maybe a year or two, it found it very difficult to experience physical reality because of the what it sensed as a lack of love, and that would appear energetically for the soul as pain. And so the soul dissociated to form the ego. Now, the ego is able to that pain, but there are, if your upbringing is exceedingly painful, the ego will then actually dissociate and form multiple personalities. So the origin of multiple personalities is goes way back to the soul dissociating, so that the ego can absorb the pain. And so now, let's say we forget the multiple personality, we're just working with the ego. Now the absorbs that pain through life, and when you get to around your mid 20s to late 20s, you've been thoroughly enculturated. You've learned how to become a viable independent human being in your cultural framework of existence. You've been thoroughly enculturated and conditioned. Now the soul wants that. The soul wants you to become a viable, independent entity, so then you can actually express the soul's destiny, its self-expression, its connection, its contribution. But in order to do that, now becomes you have to realign with the soul, and that begins, as I said, late 20s, early 30s. It's called the individuating process, where you let go of the beliefs of your cultural upbringing that no longer have you, and you let go of the fears, subconscious or unconscious, that you learned early in childhood. You have to let those go, because as you let those go, you open yourself to the energies of the soul. You're letting go of these low frequency vibrations, you're opening up to high frequency vibrations. And so you get to your 40s, if you've done enough work on your individuating, you've got to the point now where your soul can begin to express itself, and that's when you get to that point we talked about earlier where you begin to say, boy, what I'm really passionate about is this. Well, this is what where I get all my juice in life, right here, and oh, that's not my job. But how can I change my work in order to live my passion? That happens usually in the 40s, and that's when the soul comes back in, begins to come back into your life and begin to hopefully take it over. So by the time you get to the fourth stage of, which I call becoming one with your soul, you're able to say to yourself, you know, my only purpose in life is to be the servant of my soul. And you may have gone through various stages where you had goals and you had a vision and you had a mission. But these are all stages leading you back to your absolute true reality. And you become the servant of your soul. And there's one, and there's something beyond that. When you no longer the servant of your soul, you're totally living your soul.
Yeah, I like that distinction that you made in that section, becoming one with your soul. And well, gosh, Richard, we are down to the very last few minutes here, and I didn't even talk about befriending and trusting your soul. And those are great areas. So people are just gonna have to buy the book to read about it. But I really enjoyed, you know, the steps of the connecting, befriending, trusting, and becoming one with your soul. It's really a step by step guide to be able to get better communication between, you know, communication to your soul, and kind of living your life as your soul intends you to live. So, any final words, Richard, that you might want to share with the listeners about your book, What My Soul Told Me?
You know, I think that I think the most important thing to recognize is that you don't have a soul. You are a soul. That is your true energetic reality. And to the extent you're able to align with the soul, and all that merely means is letting go of your fears, to the extent you can align with your soul, you can give expression to your soul, and the expression is through connection and contribution. And that leads you to not just a happy life, but a healthy life.
Absolutely. Well, this is great. And again, I look forward to your next book. I really enjoy speaking with you. It's always fun, and you always get me and the listeners thinking. So that's to me, that's inspiration, and I really appreciate you.
Well, thank you, Robert.
Okay. Thank you again. And everyone.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.